Today I have a children's message for children of all ages, for all children of God. So here you go. I'm going to do something called that I call storytelling. It is a version of the gospel that I make that's more just a way to tell the story that we will hear in a little while when I read the written word of God from the Bible. So I'm going to set the scene first. Jerusalem is like a downtown busy city, and there is the Mount of Olives off to the side of Jerusalem. And Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, so on a grassy area with olive trees around Jesus. And one day while he was sitting there, probably looking over at Jerusalem, the disciples approached him to ask for the inside scoop. They asked, "When will Christmas happen? When will Christ come? We want to plan this. We want to be ready." And Jesus said to them, "God has a definite day and moment. God knows that definite day and moment. But no one else knows that moment and day. Not even the angels know it." Jesus also says, "It will be like in the day of Noah's Ark." Remember the story of Noah's Ark? People were eating and drinking. People were doing things like playing electric games, maybe not back then, but maybe today, and cooking their next meal. People were clueless that there was going to be a flood until the day that Noah entered the ark. Snap! Jesus will come that suddenly. People will be working side by side, and before they can say their next word, Christ, new order, new life. So keep watching, stay tuned, and be ready to get your Christmas on. That's my children's message for today. The Gospel, Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to the disciples, "About that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. As for in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken, one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming, but understand this. If the owner of a house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake, and he would not have left his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also must, for the Son of Man, or you must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour." The Gospel of the Lord. You may be seated. Well, greetings, warm Advent wishes to you on this snowy day. I think all of you know my name is Deanna Kim Bassett. Kim is my middle name. It used to be my surname when I was young. It's Korean. That's my dad's side of the family. I'm a recent graduate from Luther Seminary, and I'm waiting for my first call. Preaching is just such a privilege and Pastor Andrew has invited me to preach today. I'm so glad to be here with you. It's the first Sunday in December and the first Sunday in Advent, the 4 weeks of Advent. It begins a new church year today. Last week, last Sunday, if you came, it ended the year where the focus of all the gospel stories were on, or most of the gospel stories, were on Luke. So we leave Luke, which I'm sad about. It's my favorite gospel. Luke has an incredible outpouring for outcasts. He has a passion there for Samaritans, for Gentiles, for lepers, for tax collectors, for society's sinners. He mentions women more than the other gospels because women were also outcasts. So I will miss that perspective. With Matthew, though, comes new perspectives, new themes that we'll see throughout this upcoming year, until it will continue until Advent 2020, when we'll switch again. But for this next year, we'll be focusing on Matthew. It's the most Jewish of the Gospels. And interestingly, being the most Jewish also has a side of Matthew where Matthew criticizes Jewish leaders. Also, as in today's gospel that you heard, Matthew gets at this theme of religious complacency. Sometimes the text can be unsettling, and you have to expect that from Matthew. Matthew's Jesus rocks our world. It opens our eyes to new ways of seeing things. So we begin this week to unpack the Gospel of Mark a little bit, or the Gospel of Matthew a little bit, excuse me. So today we heard this text about the second coming of Jesus. To me, it's about the inbreaking of God's future into our present moment. God's prospective promises come to us right here and now. God reveals God's self in a moment when we don't expect it. And our world, as we know it, is turned on its head. The story has a reputation that precedes it. You may or may not know about these stories. It's controversial. It's about the second coming and what's called the rapture. And you should know that the rapture is not a word that's ever used in the Bible. But it is something that many Christian churches profess. They profess the rapture. A lot of Protestant churches and movies will talk about how followers are swept up into the clouds with the lost loved ones of the past. And they leave the unbelievers on earth where, in the movies, terrible things happen to them. One believer in the rapture is Billy Graham. Billy Graham died just a couple years ago, lived to a long time, to the age of 99. And Billy was a pastor to president. He traveled around the world. He had a wide following. It was grand. People would fill stadiums like Target Field to hear Billy Graham speak. And Billy Graham had this prediction that the rapture would save him before his earthly death. Now, that didn't happen. But Billy is not alone, because the Pew Research Center says that over half of most, over half, like 52% of evangelical church leaders believe that the rapture will happen in their lifetime. But when I look at Matthew 24, I don't see everything that people see from the movies, all these stories that kind of precede the text of Matthew 24. When I dig in, I feel like sometimes I have to just fasten my seatbelt and read along, because it's not Minnesota nice. There's some controversy in it besides just the rapture and everything else that we've made up as legend. One of the things that's controversial is that we will be, the saved people will be swept up in the rapture. Followers who die will rise into the clouds, and those will be the saved people. But the Bible does not say who is saved. Two will be in the field, one will be taken, one will be left. We kind of, some people assume that the taken people are the saved people, but that's not said here. And in fact, the Bible almost infers that the saved will not be swept. It talks about the story of Noah, right? And there's this catastrophic flood that sweeps away most living creatures on the earth and saves the people in the ark. Noah and the inhabitants there on the in the ark continue living on earth. Also, when I look at Matthew 24, I see that people are engaged in daily activities like eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. There's not wrongdoing here, so I don't hear that judgment of who is saved and who is not. It makes me wonder why everybody wouldn't be saved. There's another thing that I see in Matthew 24, and that is that some people interpret it to be predictive of the future. It foretells the second coming of Christ and our end days, and it's discussed as a dark and terrifying thing that can happen to you. But truly, I tell you, the day of the Lord is coming. The day of the Lord is coming is what verse 42 says. And coming is about Advent. The word coming in Latin is Adventus. So I think this is the focus. We are to keep awake, focusing not on fear or judgment, but on the very nearness of salvation to us right here and now. Despite my interpretation, some Christians are fixated on the end of the world as we know it today. March 2012 was one prediction. April 23rd is often thrown around. Specifically, October 21st, 2011 was supposed to be the last day. For people that make these predictions, I give them their space to believe what they want. But I stop short of changing what I do every day because I think that's going to be the last day for the world as we know it. The Greek word for Advent you might want to know about is parousia. I love that word, mostly because one of my best friends named their son parousia. Very unusual. But it means presence, arrival, or official visit. For me, Matthew 24 is about the here, the now, the present. And it challenges us to be present, to keep awake each minute for this short 4-week span of Advent. Here's something else about the text that I think is controversial. Maybe I'll take this a little bit out of context, but somebody told me that this text is for not for Lutherans, right? They think of it for evangelicals, for denominations like Southern Baptists, for the Presbyterians, maybe for Missouri Synod. So they don't apply this text to Lutherans. I disagree, though. I mean, this isn't an easy word in the Bible to keep awake, to be ready, but it's an honest word. And I think Lutherans are called to honesty, to be genuine. Here in the ELCA, Lutherans often think about the mighty fortress, and we're proud of it, right? But the mighty fortress is not entirely good. There are some parts of it that could be better. For instance, the ELCA in its church congregation is 98% white. It's filled with privilege. Privilege is being abused by the majority. But in August 2019, something hopeful happened. In addition to me graduating from seminary after 13 years of being on campus, woo! The ELCA issued this policy statement right here. It's called the Declaration of Interreligious Commitment. And I commend this to you for your reading. It's not very long. It's 16 pages, so it's readable. And I find it to be just a fascinating piece of literature that talks about how Lutherans are called to be. And I want to read something for you. I told you it was 16 pages. About 8 pages in, there's a couple of sentences about how it is our duty and our joy as Lutherans to extend God's grace, love, mercy, and justice to all those who are made in the image of God. In other words, we are called to be interreligious and to be engaged in interreligious activity because we are Lutheran. I like that word because. We do this because we are Lutheran. Because we are Lutheran, we believe in this Advent text that says, stay awake, be ready. Because we are Lutheran, we invade our mighty fortress and try to improve it. Only when we intrude on our own infrastructure can we be ready. For the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. So this word that I read today from Matthew 24, again, it can be a little disturbing. Half are expected to be taken. Doesn't it beg the question, like, are we on the right team? Are we going to be saved? And I think we should wonder that sometimes, because Jesus stands on the side of the oppressed, and we're in the majority, so we have reasons to worry. But I bring good news. Good news, you know, gospel means good news. And I just want to tell you, if someone ever proclaims the gospel to you and it doesn't sound like good news that you would want to hear, then maybe it's not good news. But the good news in this story to me is that God is for everyone. Everyone who wants to meet God, everyone who needs to meet God, everyone who feels connected to Jesus and wants that, yearns to be connected to Jesus. God is not for almost everyone. God is for absolutely each and every one of us. God is just as much for the taken as God is for the left behind. There's no need to fret, my friends. Whether we stay or we go, God is good. God is always for you. For salvation is nearer now that we are believers. God has imprisoned all of us to disobedience so that God may have mercy on all. In the end of all ends, God will be the God who is and always has been. God will be a God for all, in all, and a God through all. In the long story from the Garden of Eden to the city of God, in the long story from creation to consummation, in the long story from Adam to Abraham to Moses to David to Jesus, the good news is for everyone, not just us, and including us. I want to tell you a little story about my family. My mom was born during World War II. She was born in a Japanese internment camp. My grandparents already had 4 children, and they were expecting their 5th, which is my mom, their youngest. And when they were expecting their 5th, there was this announcement to go to the bus stops and Pick up what you can and go to the bus stops and load up on the buses. Take whatever you want with you. Nobody knew where they were going or how long they would be gone. And the buses took everybody to places where they lived together, all the Japanese, for 2 years. And then the Japanese were released. So my mom was about 2 years old, and there was plenty of discrimination in the city where people were taken and now brought back from the internment camps. Businesses would have signs up that said, no Japs served here. Sometimes we were called NIPs, not just Japs. And a lot of different kinds of things were happening in the community. But there were some brave souls out there. There were brave souls who bucked the system. You see, stores wouldn't do things like distribute light bulbs to Japanese people at the time. So if I went to the store, being Japanese or looking Japanese even, and asked for a light bulb, they would look behind their counter and they would say, I'm sorry, we're out of light bulbs. And I would be not denied light bulbs at store after store after store. But some people would go and buy light bulbs for other people. They would do this in secrecy because if the store owners found out that they were buying light bulbs for Japanese people, the store owners would stop selling light bulbs to them. So some people would buy light bulbs and then give them to the Japanese people. Who wouldn't want to know more about that? About a God who gives light bulbs to everybody. A God who cares enough to include everybody in this world. And those brave souls were doing the work of God. Sometimes we give up our privilege to make room for other people because we are Lutherans. That's what we do. Sometimes, though, we don't yet get it, and we preserve what we have. We preserve the status quo because that's where we find comfort and where we have our rights and privileges, or things that we think are our rights. And we don't give up everything to everyone, but we serve a God who does. So as we leave the walls of this church today and throughout the Advent season, remember this challenging call from a God who does it all and does it for everyone. Okay, I think we have a hymn now. So if you'd like to rise and turn to page 723, or to hymn 723.